This week we began to read from the very beginning of the Bible, the book of Genesis. On Monday and Tuesday we read about the account of the creation in 7 days. Today we start to read what's sometimes called the second creation account. Maybe that's not exactly accurate, but it's another version of what happened at the beginning. Critics will point out that these two accounts don't agree on every detail, and the very critical ones will say, well, therefore it can't be true, because in the first chapter of Genesis, it says that the plants came first and then the man came last, and in this account, the man comes first and then come the trees and various plants for food. Well, that's a completely wrong way of approaching scripture passages like this. First of all, these are not scientific accounts. These are not literal accounts, or not historical accounts in the sense of modern standards of history, dates and times and persons, names, and this sort of thing. No, these accounts are actually theology. These are theological texts. These are reflections on God and how God works and how God relates to his creation, his creatures, especially how he relates to the greatest of the creatures, man. So this is what we're reflecting on, and it doesn't make any sense to try to come up with contradictions. People often point out in the first account of creation in chapter 1 that light was created before the sun and the moon and the stars were created. So where did the light come from? That sort of thing just misses the whole point. The first chapter of Genesis shows the very orderly, peaceful setting into being or coming into being of everything, and in a kind of hierarchy. The same way scientists point out that some creatures are simpler than others. There's minerals and rocks and inanimate objects, and then there's plant life, and then there's animal life, and then animals have a different hierarchy. You know, a bacteria is different than a shark, and then there are the primates, and then finally the most complex and extraordinary of all physical creatures, there is the human person. And that's clear from that first account. Well, in the second account, or the one that we start reading today, it's not set out in that very orderly way. It's set out in a kind of more organic way, and even the man himself is formed by God from the clay of the ground, and as if God with his is like a potter, and he makes a clay figure, and then because it's still just clay, he breathes into his nostrils and makes this clay figure a living being. A beautiful way of explaining how the human person is a combination of matter and spirit, unlike any other creature. Man is unique in this way of being both body and soul, or body and spirit. So it's just a beautiful way of putting it. Now, the scholars will always point out that what's happened here is that the book of Genesis is a compilation of different sources. We don't think of it this way when we pick up the Bible and read through it. You know, chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, it's all one book. But no, the scholars point out that in chapter 1, it refers to God. I think, I don't remember what the word they use for God, Elohim, I think. And then in the second chapter, on the second account, it refers to God as Yahweh God, Yahweh Elohim. And so they say, well, this is a different author because he's calling God by a different name. Probably true if you're talking about human authors, but it's the same divine author. Remember, scriptures are 100% human, 100% divine. So the human authors, there are many different authors, and we don't even know who they are. The tradition is that Moses is the author, but what we do know for sure is that God is the author, the divine author. So what he tells us in this passage is that, first of all, that God created man out of the dust, right? Remember, man, that you are dust. We're made out of the clay of the ground. And yet we're not only clay, we are also divine spirit, divine breath. And that we're put in this garden which God made, a beautiful and good garden. Remember, we learned yesterday that all of creation is good until we get to the creation of the human person, and then we get something that's very good. So all of creation is good. Everything that is good insofar as it is, but the human person is very good by creation. And here, this very good creature, this ta'o, remember here, the ta'o is not yet Lelaki and Babae, it's just ta'o. The human person is there in the middle of this good garden with the tree of life in the middle of the garden and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And this is where, again, critics will come along and say, well, that was kind of stupid to put that tree in there and open up the possibility for the ta'o to die. Because the one command is, you can eat from any of the trees and all the trees, including the tree of life, you can live forever, but don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, because when you do that, well, then you're doomed to die. And so people say, well, why did God put that in there? It's like putting in a trap door or putting in a snare. So again, it's complete misunderstanding of the theological meaning of this text. And this is a very profound reading. It's not just a God arbitrarily setting up a trap for people to fall into, or a temptation for people to will naturally fall for. We know this in human nature. If you set something that looks good before a person is here, now don't touch that. Well, the very first thing that comes into his mind is, well, why shouldn't I touch it? What is it? What's so, or you know, those experiments that the psychologists do with children, they say, well, here's four doors. You can open those three doors, but never open that door. Well, of course the kids wonder, well, what is it about that door? Why can't I open that door? There's a natural curiosity about it. And we say, well, why would God do that? That's not what's happening here. What's revealed in a symbolic way here is the nature of being a free creature. God is completely free. He can do whatever he wants in any way he wants, whenever he wants. That's by definition, that's what God is. But creatures are by definition limited because they're not God. And creatures that are not free, meaning the animals, they just do what they're made to do. They follow their instincts. But when God made the human person and made him in his own image and likeness, he made him very good. Part of the very good is that freedom to decide, freedom to use creation in a variety of ways, many good ways. But there are some ways of using creation that are not good, and that's represented by this tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's right for us to use a tree to make a bench or to use a tree to grow mangoes. It's not right for us to use a tree to smash people over the head with it. And you say, well, it's a tree, and you're in a garden with a tree, you can do whatever you want. No, you can't do whatever you want. And that's what this reading reveals, that there are limits to what we can legitimately do. It's a necessary consequence of the gift of freedom. Animals which do not have this gift are not presented with this tree. They don't choose what's good and evil. They just do what comes to them, or what they're trained to do, or what comes from their instinct or from circumstances. But the human person, presented with the same circumstances, can decide to do good or evil. And the decision to do good is always good. It's very good. And the decision to do evil is death dealing. Okay, so that's the beauty of this passage, and we could reflect on this a long time. But let's turn to the gospel, which the liturgy puts together with this. Now, the liturgy is very beautiful and wise in how it breaks up the scriptures and kind of deals them out to us. For example, taking 2 days to reflect on the creation account in 7 days, and then we take a couple of weeks to reflect on the account written by the Yahwist, the one who refers to God as Yahweh, and all these events that happen in the garden or after the fall. So anyway, together with this passage about the Garden of Eden, this is before any sin entered the picture. The Garden of Eden is still very good, and the man is still very good. The human person, the Tao, is very good, because there's no sin yet. And then we get in today's gospel a lesson about the situation of man now that we live in a fallen world. Yesterday we celebrated Our Lady of Lourdes. We were reminded that there is such a thing as a person without sin. Mary said to St. Bernadette, "I am the Immaculate Conception." Well, the human person in the beginning was immaculate, no sin. But we're not in that condition. So Jesus is explaining that there are decisions that defile us. It's not things that happen to us that defile us. It's things that we decide that defile us. So that he says, nothing that enters one from outside can defile that person. No matter what we eat. Or no matter what happens to us. Okay, if it's a rainy day, that doesn't defile us. If we're in a polluted city, that doesn't defile us, not morally. I was in EDSA yesterday. It's very polluted. You can hardly breathe with all the smoke. But that doesn't make anybody unclean morally. What comes from inside is what defiles, Jesus says. And the disciples, who are trained in the Jewish law, are trained to know the distinction between what's clean and unclean, clean foods you can eat, unclean foods you can't eat, things like that. They don't understand it. How can you say that we can eat unclean food and not be defiled? And so Jesus explains it. And again, this is a very profound and important thing to reflect on. What comes from outside can't defile us, and foods can't defile us. But what comes out from inside, meaning from the misuse of our freedom, from wrong decisions, what we would call sins, that's what defiles us. Sin defiles us. And he says, what comes from the heart. And then he mentions a bunch of things. Evil thoughts, unchastity, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, licentiousness, envy, blasphemy, arrogance, folly. If you look closely at these, you can see that they reflect a lot of the commandments. Evil thoughts, we'll get to them in a minute. Say unchastity certainly goes against the sixth commandment. Theft, seventh commandment. Murder, sixth commandment. No, murder, fifth commandment. Adultery, sixth commandment. Greed. So you could pick them out. Say, well, these things are clearly violations of the will of God for us, and that's why we are warned against them in the commandments. I want to go to this first one, evil thoughts, because a lot of people are troubled by thoughts that enter their mind, and they think that they have sinned because those thoughts enter their mind. That's a distinction we have to be careful about, because that's temptation. Those temptations are not sins yet. And a lot of weird and evil things come into our minds, unfortunately. But even Jesus was tempted. Remember? Satan presented before him evil possibilities. That's not what Jesus is talking about here. When he says evil thoughts, he's talking about decisions to think about evil things, decisions to take in those temptations and hold on to them. So it's one thing to say, okay, what came to me is that I wish that person would just disappear. Okay, that just popped into my head. I don't know where that came from. Maybe came from Satan. Maybe come from my fallen nature. But when you're aware of that kind of a temptation, you say, no, that's not right. I can't choose against the good of a person. So I'm not going to hold on to that desire that that person disappear, much less that something bad happened to him, which is where that's a real evil thought, when people cling to the desire for evil to happen to their enemy. They have an accident or they have a fatal illness or something. That's an evil thought, and that's a sin. And that defiles. Well, I've been talking about the free choice, the decision. What we shouldn't forget here is that these evils, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, that's not the only things that come from within. Good also comes from within. Forgiveness, patience, charity, love, compassion. I mean, we can make decisions that are good decisions, and that's what we're supposed to do. So here, Jesus is emphasizing the evils because the concern of the Jews is being unclean or being made unclean by what comes from outside. Well, no, we can make evil decisions. We call them sins. And when we sin, we need to repent and ask God to have mercy on us. Because how can we be made clean again by the power of God's mercy? But that's not the only thing going on in us. And that's why I wanted to just stress this. Because we learn from the very account of creation, God made us good. He made us very good. He made us in his own image and likeness. He gave us authority over creation, meaning we do have the capacity to do what's good, and that's what we're supposed to do. Okay? Prayer, love, service, sacrifice, I say mercy, charity, patience. Oh gosh, you could come up with lots of things. And those are the things that we choose, and those which don't come on us from outside. Nobody's forcing us to be generous. But when we decide to be generous, or we decide to be merciful, that comes from within. And that is how we grow in virtue, how we grow in holiness. So this is the great drama of the human person in creation. The only creatures that have this drama before us, that we can actually make decisions for good or for evil. Animals don't do it. Angels have already done it. But we are in progress, or on the journey, or on the pilgrimage. And as we make this pilgrimage, we continually renew our decision to do the will of God, to do what is good, to be good with his help.